Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Bucher and Friends podcast. Here is your host.
Let's send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
Welcome to another episode of Bucher and Friends, part of the United WeCast Network. I'm Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1. You can read me on Bleacher Report. You can hear me on intercom terrestrial stations around the country. And you can follow me on Twitter at Rick Bucher and on Instagram at Rick_Bucher. Before we get started, I want to tell you about an app I found that has re-energized my desire to work out and has me working out harder while feeling as if I'm having more fun, all while fitting into my unpredictable schedule. The app is called CycleCast, CycleCast. And I want you to look it up now while you listen to the rest of the podcast. You tired of having to create new playlists? Looking for someone to keep you motivated with new routines, but on your time? CycleCast provides studio quality classes for both indoor cycling and running workouts, indoor and outdoor. I already had a quality spin bike at home and didn't want to spend a ton of money on a new bike with a video screen and all that. The best part, you can use the app on your iOS or Android phone, and it takes up minimal battery and data while giving you an array of instructors who all provide their own unique ride plans synchronized with songs and beats that will make you forget you're working your butt off. Well, almost. The monthly subscription is ridiculously low, but right now you don't have to spend a dime. Download the CycleCast app and use the promotional code Bucher, B-U-C-H-E-R, and you'll get 4 free additional weeks on top of your free 7-day trial. That's CycleCast, CycleCast. And don't forget to use the promotional code Bucher, B-U-C-H-E-R, to get 5 free weeks of guided workouts with killer soundtracks. CycleCast, you're going to love where this app takes you. I am pleased to have as my guest today one veteran guard with the Orlando Magic, DJ Augustine. DJ, thank you so much for taking the time. I wish you didn't have as much time as you do have right now because of injury, but nonetheless, I appreciate you joining us. There's a lot I want to get into.
Appreciate you having me, man. Yeah, I'm dealing with a little injury right now, but I'll be back pretty soon and just trying to heal up, man. But I appreciate you having me.
So there's a general icebreaker that we use, and you and I, we've known each other a little bit, so it's not as necessary as in some other instances. But Daryl Gerard Augustine Jr., and yet you go by DJ. First of all, I got to tell you, if I had a Gerard as any part of my name, I might be real tempted to flaunt that. That's a unique name, and it's got a kind of a cool about it.
Yeah, I know. I'm named exactly after my dad. He's Daryl Gerard Augustine Senior, and Gerard actually is spelled with a G. The J and DJ comes from Junior.
Yes.
So yeah, I've gone by DJ my whole life. Never went by Daryl. And it's funny, I actually named my oldest son Daryl Gerard Augustine III, so he goes by Trey. But definitely a unique name. I'm from New Orleans, so we have unique names down there, middle names and stuff like that. So, but the DJ is for Daryl Jr.
Yeah, I want to get into the impact, because you were impacted by Hurricane Katrina coming up, and I'm really curious to find out exactly how you think now as you look back. growing up, starting a family, doing all that, how that impacted you and your life view. But we're recording this, I don't know, 8-9 days before the trade deadline. And you've been involved in a couple of trades. And so I wonder what it's like, you know, at this point, you've been through everything. But there was a couple of years there where you suddenly found yourself being moved in February. And I wonder what does this time of year always then kind of like, hey, let me just get past that trade deadline, never know what's going to happen, or do you become acclimated to it?
I think now at this point in my career, being 12 years in the league, I think now I'm acclimated to it. It's not that I'm used of it, but now it doesn't bother me as much. You know, one of my early years in the league, I was involved in a lot of trade rumors, but nothing ever happened. And those times I was pretty nervous, and you know, because you don't know what it's like to be traded if you've never been traded before. So you don't know what it's like. You feel comfortable where you're at. There's a lot of things that go into it. And the times that I was involved in trade rumors, when I was in Charlotte, I didn't have a family. You know, I didn't have any kids yet. So, but at the same time, I still was nervous. I still didn't want to get traded. And it was still a lot of anxiety hearing your name involved in trade rumors and stuff. And then when I finally did get traded, which I feel will happen to everybody at some point in their career if they play a long time in the league. When I finally did get traded, it came as a shock because I was actually starting for the Pistons at the time, and I was playing really well, and I didn't see it coming. And it was for the big Reggie Jackson trade from OKC to Detroit, and so I was involved in that one. That one kind of hit hard, you know, because I like I said, I didn't see it coming. There wasn't any rumors about me. I had a family at that time. I was married with two kids at that time, and you know, it hit hard, man. I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't know what to expect, and you know, I ended up getting traded to OKC, and you know, I give my wife a lot of credit because she handled everything at home, packing up the house and getting the kids together, ready to move from Detroit to OKC. So you know, it was a surprise. It was a shock. It was a tough adjustment, and then that was my first time. And then after that, I was traded again from OKC to Denver, which I kind of expected and I kind of was prepared for at that time. And it was I wouldn't say easy, but it was an easier transition at that time. And and now at this point in my career, it doesn't bother me at all anymore. Like you said, I've been through everything. I've been traded. I've been cut. I've been benched. I've started. I've played every role you can play in the league. And none of that stuff kind of bothers me. I just pretty much feel like if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. If not, I got to focus on what I'm doing right now at the time.
Yeah, that's the part I think the average fan when, you know, or even the media, you know, casually talking about guys getting traded and dealt, and sometimes feel like we lose the human realization that you're talking about a dude, especially guys who have families. Like, you're talking about upending guys' lives. And you know, and I've probably been guilty of it too. You know, the media come in and these guys' names in trade rumors, and you're asking them about it.
Sure.
And I'm thinking, now that I look at it, and in part because I have a family too, I'm thinking, God, you're just telling this dude, you know, in any minute you could be sent halfway across the country to a new reality, you and your family, and all the things that you got to think about, school and house and community and all that stuff, man. And that,
for sure.
I don't know how you compartmentalize that, or how you put that to the side and still do what is also a high pressure job.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, you know, and that's the thing. I think, like, the average fan, or, you know, like you said, the media, sometimes I don't think they understand we are human. And for example, that's like, you know, a regular person that's working a 9-to-5, if they have to, their boss comes in and tell them he's sending them to another city that day, and they have to leave that day to meet his new coworkers and his new boss and all that kind of stuff. And you have to leave your family behind to kind of pack up and get the kids out of school and get it, you know, it's tough, man. You know, and people don't understand that. And like you said, when we're traded, we have to leave that same day and meet the next team in whatever city they're in and play in an NBA game.
And
leave your family behind to deal with whatever you have going on where you're at. So it's tough, man. People don't understand what comes with it. They, you know, a lot of people see that, you know, we make money and we're on TV and all that kind of stuff, but they don't understand, you know, the pressures and the things that go along with being an NBA player that we have to deal with. But at the end of the day, we got to go out there and perform no matter what, you know, no matter what's going on at home, what's going on in our personal life, you know, traded, whatever. You got to go out there and perform to keep your job.
Yeah. Money doesn't change a little one coming, going, Daddy, why do we have to move? Like that?
Nah, not at all.
Right?
At all.
You can't buy a solution to that necessarily, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
So one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is because I just appreciate the guys like yourself. First of all, let's just start here. For a guy, a point guard of your size, and I see the game becoming ultra, longer, taller, more athletic, I truly appreciate the guys like yourself who continue to get it done, continue to demonstrate value, continue to orchestrate these teams. And I wonder if you pointed to one thing, like why do you think you've survived, not only survived, but thrived, built this career that you have?
Number one, I think I've always, no matter what position I was in, like I said earlier, I've started, I've came off the bench, I've been cut, I've been traded. Like, I feel like no matter what situation I was in, I've always worked hard. You know, I always was a high IQ player, and I've always been this size. But, you know, the game doesn't change no matter how tall you are, how small you are. If you know how to play basketball and you go out there and play the right way and do all the right things, it'll show no matter how tall or small you are. And that's one thing I've been able to do in my career, just show, you know, how high of an IQ player I am and be able to be on the floor with any group of guys and make my teammates look better when I'm out there and make the game look different when I'm I've had coaches tell me and people tell me all the time the game isn't the same when you're out there.
Yeah.
And I think that just goes back to just my IQ and my love for the game and just playing the right way. A lot of guys these days don't play the right way. They just want to get their stats. And some of them are doing things that they're not good at on the floor, which shows, you know, in their stats and in their percentages and things like that. And I've always played a certain kind of way my entire life. So when you look at my percentages, my 3-point percentage or whatever, I don't force shots. I try not to turn the ball over. And those little things will keep you in the game and keep you on the floor and have your coaches, no matter where you are, they'll trust you out there on the floor with the ball in your hand. And that's just one thing I've always been able to do.
Yeah, no, that's 100%. The game, though, has changed over the last 10, 15 years. I wonder how have you adjusted to both on offense and defense? It's just the way they're officiating it, the way what teams emphasize. First, let's start with offense. How different are the offenses that you see being run now versus, say, when you first came into the league playing for, what, Larry Brown in Charlotte?
Yeah, it's totally different, man. When I first came in the league, it was all post guys. It was nothing but get the ball to the post and let them play and just move around and cut off of the post and let the big guys go to work. That was my first, like, 4 or 5 years in the league, you know, and it wasn't a lot of – it was some pick and roll. You know, you had, like, Steve Nash, who I looked up to, CP3, you know, those guys who were great at pick and roll. But it was mostly get it to the big guys down low, let them go to work, and, you know, everybody spot up. That's how it was when I first came in the league. And now it's totally different. It's now you got big guys shooting threes and handling the ball, and it's all pick and roll and transition. So the game has evolved, and it's definitely not the same. I think that's why a lot of big guys aren't able to play as long or be in the game as much, because if you can't shoot the three, you really don't have a reason to be on the court. If you can't shoot the three or guard another big that can shoot, that can stretch the floor, you really can't be on the floor. You know, the game is different now. You know, you got to be able to guard pick and roll. You got to be able to guard different positions and, you know, be able to move your feet, really. And it's all about communication and whatever your scheme is with your team, you know, just sticking to it.
Yeah. Defensively, it's almost, and I feel like the NFL is in the same, I feel bad for DBs and almost anybody on the defense. I feel like both games have been slanted toward benefiting the offense. The inability to touch guys or like having to just accept that there's going to be more scoring. Guys are going to get to the line in a way that, I mean, you really can't muzzle guys the way maybe once upon a time you could. How do you adapt to that, both physically and mentally, knowing that, you know what, I'm going to give up, I got to give up something, because otherwise this dude's either getting to the line or I just, you don't have the same ability to lock guys down.
Yeah, I mean, I think the game is, you know, the NBA is still trying to find ways to, you know, handle the officiating and some of the different calls, some of the rules they've changed over the years. I think they're trying to make it more entertaining, I guess, for the fans.
Mm.
And, you know, more high-scoring games. You know, I think that's what the fans want to see. See the superstars, you know, do what they do on the floor every night. So I think the game is kind of changing that way as far as officiating. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to get stops. That's how you win. And I think certain coaches are trying to come up with schemes. If you see a lot of zone is being played these days,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't see a lot of that back when I first came in the league or even before I made it to the NBA, it wasn't a lot of zone. That's more college stuff. You've seen a lot of pressing. You know, different schemes that coaches are trying to do, because it's too hard to guard guys one-on-one in this league with the lane spread open. Everybody's so good and everybody's so talented. It's going to be a team effort every night. You know, you're going to have to stick to your scheme and, you know, do that kind of stuff.
Yeah. There's a guy out there who I put somewhat in the same category as you, Darren Collison, who stepped away.
Mm-hmm.
And now is looking at the possibility of coming in and joining either the Clippers or the Lakers. You had a good run. I think your best playoff run was with Indiana, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, for you, you know, obviously you've created value for yourself. You played on a number of teams. How much would you like to, like, where is it on your bucket list in terms of, man, I'd love to get with a team that makes another deep run, or before it's all over, I want to experience that? Or is it, do you become more of a businessman and say, hey, you know what, let me get as many years as I can, let me be on teams that are competitive? But I wonder if your mentality shifts in how you look at your career and what you aspire to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of everything you said, I think, at this point right now. I'm in great shape. I take care of my body. I feel like I can play another 4-5 years max if I wanted to. But I think it's a combination of everything you said. I mean, right now, I feel like the position I'm in Orlando, I feel like I can help this young team continue to make the playoffs, which Orlando hasn't done in a very long time. Except for last year, we made it for the first time in 7 years, I think, or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of loving my role with helping this young team, being a veteran, helping us keep making the playoffs continuously and getting further and further. I love this group of guys that I'm with. And at the same time, I'm looking forward as my future, you know, as far as a businessman and meeting people outside of basketball and thinking about life after basketball, going to different programs that the NBA have for us so we can, you know, be ready for that transition.
Yeah.
You know, off the court. And then at the same time, I'm a competitor. You know, I want to win and I want to taste the NBA championship one day. And maybe that'll be something I do or I look for, you know, when I'm almost at the very end.
Right.
You know, maybe get with a team like that. But right now, I feel like I'm still in great shape and I can play at a high level with everybody on the floor. And I love my role here with Orlando, helping this young team get better and try to move up that ladder in the East to get as high as we can before the playoffs start.
So I wonder, because of your veteran presence, you're also like, dude, whenever I've seen you, like, I've never seen you like cracking up or cracking wise or DJ. I mean, and there's no, like, to my knowledge, there's no DJ Augustine nickname. Like, you've always had this like serious demeanor about yourself. Is that, am I just not seeing the other side, or is that the way you've approached things? Is that your personality all the time? What is it?
Nah, I'm actually, if you get to know me and you're around me more, you know, I'm pretty funny. I like to have fun and joke around. Most of my teammates are probably saying I'm the jokester on the team, but
really,
that's just something that I've, I mean, yeah, that's just something I'm, like I said, I've been through so much in the league that I've learned that you got to have fun with it too, because it could be so stressful and so much pressure on you to perform and contracts and different things. You gotta enjoy it at the same time, because not everybody's in the NBA. This is a blessing for us to be playing. We could be doing anything else in the world, but we're playing basketball for a living, and you got to remember to enjoy it at the same time. But when I step on the floor, when I walk into practice, I'm serious. You know, I don't play around. Like I said, even in practice, I'm competitive. I'm trying to go at you and try to help you get better, and I'm trying to, you know, be the best practice player I could be, you know, everything. I approach everything like that.
Yeah. Well, and you've certainly demonstrated that, and it's been part of your value. I wonder what it's like as a competitive guy. Like, you, they've utilized you as a mentor, as a, I don't know, a security blanket, bringing in like an Elfrid Payton or Markelle Fultz. Having that combination of, hey, I want to play, I want to be the guy, and at the same time having the team bring in young guys who they're trying to develop, and you got to look at and think, you know, ultimately, are they trying to develop somebody who's going to take my spot? How do you approach that and maintain the right attitude? Because obviously you have, but I would think that, you know, at times, like, your competitiveness versus your wanting to do the right thing, wanting to help the team, that can get a little tangled.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's definitely a mindset. You know, I learned from some of the best vets when I came into the league, like Juwan Howard and Gerald Wallace, Jason Richardson, even Jared Dudley. He's still playing, but he was he was a year ahead of me when I came into the league. But I just learning from those guys and understanding that you can create value. You could kind of create your own niche in this league. You know, because everybody has such an ego. Everybody wants to be a starter. Everybody wants to score 30 every night. And it's not enough room for everybody to be in that role. And I kind of looked at it that way, like, man, if I just come in, work hard, do the right thing off the court, have a high character, then whenever my name is called, perform at a high level, I can play this game for a long time, no matter how tall I am, no matter how small I am. And,
right.
That's just one way I really approached it. And, you know, every team I've been on, if you look at my track record, every team I've been on, if I was a backup, I came in, I was trying to be one of the best backups in the league. I didn't have a problem with that. If I was a starter, I tried to come in and be one of the best starters, one of the, you know, top guys in the league at that starting position. And I feel like my attitude really is what kept me in this role, because I don't mind coming off the bench. I don't mind starting. You know, whatever team needs me to do.
Right.
If a starter goes down with an injury, I can come in and start and play well and keep the team running smooth. And if they have a younger guy they want to use in front of me and they need me to mentor, I can come in and be the best backup in the league or help the second unit run well and perform. So I feel like that's just something that a lot of guys don't have that attitude. Like I said, everybody wants to be the man. Everybody wants to be a starter. You know, if they're not a starter, they got a bad attitude, or they're not getting the minutes, they, you know, causing problems in the locker room. And you see those guys are not in the league anymore. So, you know, that's something I realized early in my career. And then once I saw the results, I just stuck with it, man. Just, you know, I always had that attitude.
I don't know if people realize the mental toughness and discipline that requires, though. And because, because you've got people, you know, it's not only just you, but you got people around you, you've got the media, like, you got all these voices that if you got it rolling and then you're coming off the bench, they're going to be like, hey, dude, you should be starting, man. Like, oh, what's up? They're not like you're going to get somebody who's going to try to feed you some negative just, you know, worrying about, hey, what's my next contract going to look like? What, you know, are my numbers going to be there? Like, the business aspect of it. Who do you credit how did you learn not to allow any of that to interfere with how you approach the job?
Yeah, just like I said, the people that I was around coming up, you know, somebody I didn't mention was TJ Ford as well. You know, and just being humble, man, you know, just, you know, my family, you know, just being humble. And you know, for example, if you look at last year, I was a starting point guard last year. You know, I had one of my best years of my career. You know, we made it to the playoffs. We beat the Raptors one game in the playoffs. We eventually lost, but they eventually won the championship. And you come and then to come back this year and I get moved to the bench behind Markel, I had no problem with that. And I let the team know I had no problem with that because I understand not just the game, but I understand the business. And I understand that he's a young guy and former number one pick coming in, and he's a great player, you know. And if this is the role that they want me to play this year to help the team win, then I have no problem with that. And I think that goes back to the last question, like, how do you stay so in the league so long? And how do you, you know, do the things you're doing? I think that's a prime example. You know, just I had no problem with starting last year, taking the team to the playoffs and playing great, and coming off the bench this year and helping the second unit. That's you gotta sacrifice in order to win. And that's one thing I learned playing with those good teams I played with and playing under those veterans that I played with.
Yeah. That's the trickiest thing, though, is to be a starter, to have the confidence and a little bit of ego, right? Like, I can run this. And then be able to put that ego aside when it's not asked of you. I mean, sounds good. I just know how hard it must be to kind of bounce back and forth between, I'm going to run the show. Oh, you don't need me to run the show? I'll be over here when you need me.
Right. Yeah, it definitely, you gotta believe in yourself at all times. That's definitely, you gotta believe in yourself at all times. And then, you know, the media and even social media nowadays, they're gonna make it sound even worse. Oh, you've been benched, you got benched. You a bench player.
Right.
You know, but hey, look, nothing's wrong with being on the bench, coming off the bench. I'm in the NBA. You know, it's only 450 of us in the world, and that's how I look at it. That's how I approach it. And if this is what the team needs from me, I'll do this for the next 5-6 years, you know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, you can't listen to what other people say. That's one thing I've never done. I've always been doubted my entire life since I was little. I was always this small. I was always the smallest on the floor. I was told I wouldn't be in the NBA. I wouldn't make it in college. And, you know, that kind of stuff just fuels my fire and just motivates me. And, you know, I just never did listen to social media, what others say and what, you know, some of the negative stuff, people who don't have a clue what goes on behind the scenes or what it takes to be in this position. I never listened to it, you know, and you know, but you definitely have to be mentally tough, and you definitely have to believe in yourself at all times.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
So I wonder, I had the opportunity, the players, the NBA Players Association, when Hurricane Katrina hit, I went down on a caravan of trucks to Gulfport, Mississippi and New Orleans to bring supplies down there and to visit some of the kids and the displaced families in the Salvation Army camps down there. And so I know what, you know, I got a glimpse of that, and it was just devastating, you know, just to, like, I'm seeing these kids, and we dropped in there for a couple of days, and they wanted to know, I mean, it was like kids coming up to us after we were there, you know, bringing water and food or whatever, and they were like, can you take us with you? Like, I don't have a home. And so you experienced that firsthand. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Yeah, for sure.
How?
I was a senior in high school.
Yeah. What was that like? I mean,
it was tough, man. You know, I was, like I said, I was a senior in high school. I was about 16, 17 years old. We pretty much watched everything on the news in Houston, Texas. That's where my family and I evacuated to the day before Katrina hit. And we just sat in the hotel room and watched everything on TV, watched the whole city underwater and listening to different reports. And, you know, it was hard to get in touch with family members because all the cell phone networks wasn't working. So It was tough, man. You know, and you know, I credit, now that I'm a parent, I credit my mom and dad for keeping us safe and, you know, the things they did at that time to keep us from not worrying and any, you know, what could happen from basically losing everything. You know,
yeah.
You think about it, we lost everything, but they made us feel like everything was going to be okay. And, you know, that's tough to do, you know, as a parent when you know you lost everything and it's on TV. So I respect them and I love them for that now that I'm a parent. And it was just tough, man. It was tough to see, you know. We didn't really know what to expect once we went back to see.
Yeah.
You know, for ourselves. And it was just an uneasy time. It was almost a month or two before we was even able to go back and actually see the damage.
And what did you find when you went back there?
You could see the water line at the top of the ceiling, almost where the water just sat for days and weeks. All of our house is pretty much rearranged. If you can imagine water rushing in the house, it pretty much took all the furniture that was in the front of the house and moved it to the back of the house, and just everything was just all over the place. You know, we didn't take much with us when we left because we didn't think it was going to be bad. And so we pretty much lost everything. All our, you know, my mom lost pictures of us when we were younger. I lost video footage of my games when I was little coming up, you know, and everything you could think of, we lost it all. And had to start from scratch in Houston, Texas. And, you know, that was it. I went to college the next year and at the University of Texas, and my family still lives in Texas to this day.
How much did that disrupt? I mean, because that's a pivotal time, senior in high school.
Yeah.
How much that did that disrupt, you know, your plans or your what you were trying to get done at that point?
Yeah, I was my high school, we had just won our second state championship in a row after my junior year. So we had the same exact team coming back my senior year. So we were going to three-peat. And that kind of took it away from us. We didn't get a chance to play that season. I didn't even get to go to that school the rest of that year. I had to go to school in Texas.
Wow.
Because my school didn't open back up until, I think, February or something like that. So Katrina hit in, I think, September or August, and I had to go to school. You know, I couldn't just sit at home. So I had to go to school in Texas, and I couldn't play with my team that was supposed to win the third championship.
Wow.
In a row. So that kind of took that from us. But when I look back, I kind of think about it in a positive way. I think it prepared me for college and prepared me for life, you know, because to show you that, you know, can't take things for granted.
Yep.
You can't take life for granted. And, you know, I think that's the positive thing that came from Katrina.
I can't help but think that your appreciation for your NBA career, for your, hey, dude, I get to play, and like just the perspective that you have, that it was shaped in a way, you know, in a way that we wouldn't wish on anybody. But as you said, that there was a positive that came out of it because of your understanding of how quickly things can just be completely upended.
Yeah, for sure. And that's something you definitely, if you play in the NBA or anything, I think any professional sport, you have to understand. And that's one thing I try to preach to my younger teammates now. You know, there's so many guys I came in the league with, or some of the guys even came in the league after me that's not here anymore because they took the game for granted. You know, they played around, they didn't work hard, you know, they got into other things, and, you know, and their career only lasted a year or two, you know, and I tell them all the time, you know, it's a blessing. I always say, you know, we 450, you know, out of the world, you know, to be able to play this game and make money playing it and take care of our families. And you can't never take it for granted because there's always somebody coming up under you, younger than you, better than you, that's trying to take your position. And you got to, you know, you got to just be humble and approach every day like that.
Is there any one guy that you played with in your career, recent or earlier, that you look at it and you go, damn, man, that dude was talented. That dude and who didn't make it, but like you look at it and go, he should have. Like he that's a dude who had so much talent and just didn't realize how cutthroat this business is, and that ultimately cost him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so many guys I could name that I could think that would like that had so much talent, so much potential, and never reached it because they didn't work hard. You know, the money changed them and things like that. You know, it's so many guys I can name, you know. And if I had to name, it's hard to name one guy from that group because, like I said, it's so many. But if anybody, I go back to my draft class, you know, Joe Alexander. I don't know if you remember him, West Virginia.
Yep.
He was drafted. I'm only naming him because, you know, I remember this because he was drafted ahead of me. He was the number eight pick. I was number nine for Charlotte, but he was eight before me. And he got drafted to Milwaukee,
I believe.
But he could do everything. He could jump. He could shoot. He could play. You know, and I don't even think he lasted 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know what happened with that, but you know, that's just how quick it can go. You know, you can go from being drafted top 10, and you know, and it could be gone the next year. You know, that's how fast it happens.
Yeah. You know, the flip side of that is, and I don't know, you know, I think there was some growing up that Michael Carter Williams had to do. But I also look at him being in the situation with Philly, and this is why the whole tanking thing bothers me, because young guys coming into situations that aren't built to be competitive, as you know that, and as you mentioned, like the habits that you develop early on, how you're introduced to the game, how quickly you realize, hey, man, if I'm not getting better every day, there's somebody who's going to catch up with me from behind. I'm going to get replaced in a heartbeat. Like, I don't know, you know him better than I do, but I've been kind of impressed that Michael's kind of stuck with it and kind of, it to me, looks like he's grown up and he survived that early time and all the abuse that he took going from, you know, 1 minute rookie of the year to now bouncing around the league.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that one. I mean, I feel like Mike, for example, what happened to him, and I mean, I feel like those things, when we look back as players, myself, Mike, you know, we probably are thankful for those things happening to us, because we wouldn't be in the positions we're in today, and we wouldn't know the things we know today, and we wouldn't take the game for granted, like I said, like some people do. You know, and you know, with the draft, it's all about sometimes you get drafted to the right situation for you, and sometimes you get drafted to a bad situation. If you think about, like, the Rondos and the Draymonds.
Yeah.
If those guys got drafted to the Celtics or the Golden State Warriors, who would they still be Rondo and Draymond today? You know what I'm saying? Like, some guys are drafted into perfect positions and perfect situations for their game and culture-wise. You know, they got – if you could come in as a rookie and you got Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, you know, you're not going to know nothing but good habits. But
right.
If you come into the league and you got a team that's last place in the East or the West, and you're learning from guys who don't really care, they just want to get their numbers and go out, you're going to learn bad habits.
Yep.
You won't last. So,
yep.
I mean, it's all – the draft is tricky. You know, you want to go as high as you can when you come in, but I think the big picture, you know, you talk to older guys like me, it's all about going to the right situation. And like I said, in my story, I wouldn't change nothing that happened to me in my career, because it made me who I am and the player I am today. Things I know on and off the court today, I mean, you know, I'm blessed that my journey's been the way it's been.
You were a college teammate of Kevin Durant's, and you got a chance to play with him in Oklahoma City. I didn't get to know him until he came into the league. And so I wonder, from you knew him early on, did he grow into being the outspoken guy we know him to be now? Or was he always this way and he just kept it on the down low?
When we first got to college, KD wasn't very outspoken at all. KD really just wanted to play basketball. I think he's the same way to this day, you know, as far as his character. He just loves basketball. I've never seen somebody that, when they wake up, they just want to play basketball all day. Don't eat. Don't play any video games, none of that kind of stuff. Stay up all night playing basketball. That's it. Watch basketball. You know, anything that has something to do with basketball, that's KD's life. He's the same way to this day. But I think he's just gotten more mature, and he's become a man, and I think now he feels, you know, he's accomplished everything you could think of at the highest level. MVP of the league, MVP of the finals, champion, you know, scoring title, all-star. I mean, he's done it all, and I think now he's gotten to the point where he feels like he's a man. He wants to stand up for himself against, you know, the negative that's been coming at him over the last few years. He's been quiet for a long time. And I feel like he has the right to defend himself. But, you know, everybody has their own way to do that. And, you know, the way he's been doing it, that's what he chose to do. But I definitely feel like he feels like, you know, I'm tired of, you know, people talking about me. I've done everything you could think of in the league. And, you know, I should be, you know, spoken with the best. And I feel like he's at a point now where he just feels he needs to defend himself and he has the right to.
Do you think?
But, you know, when I look back, he wasn't always that outspoken, though. He never really was, you know, cared about what other people said.
Yeah. I wonder, because he got some criticism in Oklahoma City, you know, after they weren't winning a championship and people started to get restless. But it wasn't to the level that it was once he left and he went to Golden State. And I wonder whether that was just, that's what inspired it, or it was, and you know Oklahoma City, like, they're very buttoned up, man. They're San Antonio North, right? I mean, they have a certain approach to things. So I never knew whether it was, hey, you know what, it kind of lit a fire under KD that, so you criticize me because I haven't won championships. Now I go to a team and I go win championships and you're going to criticize me for that. Whether it was that contradiction in his mind or whether it was really, he was just, this is the way Oklahoma City does things and he was going to follow that. Whether he was feeling some kind of way when he was in Oklahoma City already. I don't know if you know, but I wondered, like, if you had any insight into that.
Yeah, I mean, I actually played in Oklahoma with KD and Russ and all those guys, and the fans in Oklahoma are just amazing. The organization is amazing. But I personally think, and I don't know, because I never talked to KD about that whole situation, but I personally think and believe that once he won that championship with Golden State, I think he felt, like I said, he felt like he did it. He's done it all. And nobody can, what can you say about me? You know, and, you know, up to that point, he's won MVP. He's done it, scoring titles. You know, he did it all up until that point, and that championship was just the icing on the cake, you know, and that's when I think he became more verbal and, you know, wanted to get back at people or stand up for himself, if you want to put it like that. And I don't think it necessarily was anything against OKC or those people out there, you know, because I know they showed him a lot of love and he loved them back, you know.
Yeah.
So I just think it was like a tipping point and just a point in his life where he was like, look, this solidifies who I am and I did it all. You can't tell me nothing anymore and I'm going to stand up for myself. So.
What do you think, and I know this, I'm asking you to kind of speculate, but he, and I've always had a good relationship with him and I've always felt like he's taken way more criticism and for all that he's accomplished. Like, people take too many shots at him. But what do you think he's, and I don't have a problem with him like leaving Golden State. Hey man, like I did this. Let me go on to the next challenge. Yeah. I have no problem with any of that. What I don't know is what's the next challenge for him? Like what?
Yeah.
He to me seems to be searching for, okay, what's the next mountain to climb? And I'm not sure I know what it is. Do you?
Yeah. I don't, but I think, you know, I know he's into a lot of business stuff now. He's, you know, he's into a lot of investing and he's starting his own company and things like that. So I believe it may be something on that level.
Yeah.
I think he wants to win at the same time. He wants to bring a championship to Brooklyn, but I think he's also in a place, which being New York, is a great place for off the court. You know, things that can happen in his life as far as business. And I think that's what he's building right now. You know, at the same time, he's still an NBA player. He's still one of the greatest players in the league. And he's definitely going to come back and be at that level again. But I think personally right now, he's at another part of his life, chapter in his life where he's focusing on more business stuff maybe, you know? That's what I believe.
Yeah.
We don't talk as much as we used to, but I could definitely, on the outside looking in, I definitely see, you know, what direction he's going in, and I think that may be it.
That makes a lot of sense, because as this was, you know, we're going through everything last spring, I kept hearing New York, not Brooklyn, not the Nets or the Knicks. I was hearing New York. That's what he was making his decision on, and that was before the injury. And then I think the injury certainly influenced things, and his conversations with Kyrie did as well. But that really makes a lot of sense from everything that I knew as he was making that decision. All right. DJ, wish you the best of luck in getting back as quickly as possible. As I said, I've always appreciated your game and the way you approach it. Even if you have the game face on, when the media comes in the locker room afterward, I hope sometime we get the opportunity where I get to see the other DJ Augustine. I believe now it's in there.
Yeah,
I do.
For sure, man. I appreciate it, Rick.
But thank you, and I'll see you down the road.
All right, man. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, DJ. You got it. Thanks, man. That does it for this episode of Bucher and Friends. Hope you enjoyed the conversation with DJ Augustine. In the next podcast, I'll be joined by Super Bowl champ, NFL vet, Will Blackman. We will preview the Super Bowl between the 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs, give you everything that you should look for, along with our predictions. Don't forget, please rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want us to do something for you, screenshot that review and send it to @BucherFriends, and you will be eligible to win some prizes. In the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.